Russian forces continue striking cities throughout Ukraine.
Around 8 a.m. In the morning, all this started, and 44 missiles were destroyed by air defense.
Plus, what impact has the Black Sea grain deal had, and what's at risk now that Russia says it's temporarily suspending participation?
If the deal actually collapses, what we will be seeing is that more than 10 million metric tons of grain that is still stuck at the ports will not be able to come out.
And later in the program, how one woman in Sumy, Ukraine has taken it upon herself to help the war's orphan dogs. Today is Monday, October 31st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. Russian attacks hit multiple Ukrainian cities on Monday, with Ukrainian officials saying that infrastructure facilities were once again among the targets. Ukraine's army posted on Telegram that the barrage of attacks included more than 50 cruise missiles in several waves of attacks. Joining us from Kyiv is Anna Chernikova.
Around 8 a.m. In the morning, all this started. And for the moment, we have confirmed information from the general staff that it was in total a bit more than 50 missiles struck by the Russian forces to the territory of Ukraine. And 44 missiles were destroyed by air defense. So we know that 18 missiles were destroyed in the central part, and including Kyiv and Kyiv region. 12 were destroyed in the south, 9 in the east, and 5 in the west. What I can say that one of the biggest damage happened in the critical infrastructure happened in Cherkasy region, which is central part of the country. And also it was another bad damage in the Kyiv region. And for the moment, what we know that, for instance, in Kyiv, the government already announced that there will be shortages of the electricity and people should get ready for this. 80% of the city of Kyiv was without electricity as a result of this attack. And starting from early morning, all the services, rescue services and repair services were in action. By afternoon, the whole left bank of the city of Kyiv was already back with electricity. And now, for this point of time, the right bank is also getting better and recovering, but still there are shortages, and not only of electricity, but also water supply. And the government is asking people to actually get ready for more.
And turning our attention to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, this has been an area of great concern to the international community because of the ongoing fighting in the Zaporizhzhia region and the city of Nerhodar and the occupation of the plant by Russian forces. But I also understand there's also some ecological concern about the plant and the surrounding area.
Yes, exactly. Today we have information from the Enerhoatom. Due to the energy blocks of the station are stopped, the warm water is not getting to the natural waters around. And this leads to the massive death of fish species in the area. And according to them, if the temperature of the water will not heat up, it could cause the loss of thousands of fish species, which is extremely bad for the ecosystem.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, Ukraine, thank you very much for providing those timely updates.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve.
The European Union on Sunday called upon the Russian Federation to reverse its decision to suspend participation in a UN-brokered grain deal, a move that undermined efforts to ease a global food crisis, and that Ukraine says that Moscow planned well in advance. Reuters' Lauren Anthony is up next.
Moscow suspended its participation in the Black Sea deal on Saturday, effectively cutting shipments from Ukraine, one of the world's top grain exporters. It was in response to what Russia called a major Ukrainian drone attack earlier in the day on its fleet near the port of Sevastopol in Russian-annexed Crimea. EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell urged Russia to reverse its decision on Twitter, adding that, quote, Russia's decision to suspend participation in the Black Sea deal puts at risk the main export route of much-needed grain and fertilizers. On Saturday, U.S. President Joe Biden called the move purely outrageous.
It's going to increase starvation. There's no reason for them to do that. But they're always looking for some rationale to be able to say the reason they're doing something outrageous is because the West made them do it.
Russia's defense ministry said Ukraine attacked the fleet with 16 drones early on Saturday, and that British Navy specialists had helped coordinate what it called a terrorist attack. Russia said it repelled the attack, but that the ships targeted were involved in ensuring the grain corridor out of Ukraine's Black Sea ports. Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said Moscow used the explosions 137 miles away from the grain corridor as a false pretext for a long-intended move. And President Volodymyr Zelensky called for a strong response from the United Nations and G20.
How can Russia be among others in the G20 if it deliberately works to create famine on several continents? This is nonsense. Russia has no place in the G20.
Russia's departure from the grain deal marks a new development in an eight-month war that began with Russia's invasion in February. The conflict has recently been dominated by a Ukrainian counteroffensive and Russian drone and missile attacks that have destroyed more than 30% of Ukraine's generating capacity and hit populated areas. Each side has accused the other of being prepared to detonate radioactive bombs.
Lauren Anthony reports for Reuters News. Recep Tayyip Erdogan said that Turkey will continue its efforts for the Black Sea grain export deal. Dorian Jones joins us from Istanbul with those details. Dorian, thank you for taking the time to join us today. I wanted to ask you about the grain deal that Russia said it was pulling out from over the weekend. European leaders have said that they are going to work to continue the efficacy of the deal, with France saying that it was going to work with other European partners to try and help facilitate the transport of grain from Ukraine to other European countries over the railways. On Monday, as we just said, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan announced that he was also going to implement steps to try and continue to facilitate the transport of grain over the Black Sea. So my question to you is, what exactly did the Turkish leader say that's going to allow for that facilitation?
Well, President Erdogan has reiterated his commitment to the continuation of this deal, and in very carefully worded language did criticize President Putin, saying that Russia is behaving hesitantly towards this, but he said they are going to use all their diplomatic efforts to get this deal to continue. And on the ground, for at least for now, the deal does seem to be continuing. In fact, today, ironically, saw a record amount of grain being exported in the region of 350,000 tons. And all the other parties involved in this deal said they are going to continue with this deal. So in many ways, they are probably trying to call Russia's bluff. And I'm working on the basis they don't believe that Russia would do something to stop these ships from leaving Ukrainian ports. But this is all very unknown, and this does bring up another potential point of confrontation. But at the moment, Erdogan, who has a lot of invested in this deal, both economically and also diplomatically, does seem to be working very hard to continue this going. And Erdogan does have very good relations with his Russian counterpart, meeting Russian President Putin more than three times in the space of 3 months.
Dorian, as you mentioned, a record amount of grain transferred through the JCC, the Joint Coordination Center, here on Monday. But since the implementation of the grain deal, more than 9 million metric tons have made its way over the Black Sea. But what happened at the JCC on this Monday? What are you hearing about the operational status of the Joint Coordination Center now that Russia has suspended its participation?
Well, there's been very little news coming out of the JCC Center, other than that the operations are still continuing. Now, what are the Russian delegation, and it is made up of Russians, Ukrainians, United Nations representatives, and Turkish officials. Now, what the Russian officials and delegation is doing there, it is very unclear. There's been no statements from them, and there's been very little from the center other than that the operation is still continuing. I think that everyone is very much on edge. They really, really want to bring Russia back into this deal, because this deal is seen as so important for the world food prices. And in fact, the price of wheat has started to rise on the news that this deal is at risk. But for now, at least, the message is that they are, all the other parties say, we are committed to the continuation of this deal. All eyes will now be on Moscow and what they will do next.
Reporting for VOA from Istanbul, Dorian Jones. Dorian, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Saj Foot, who asked that his surname not be used, is the International Rescue Committee's East Africa Regional Emergency Director. And he joins us from Nairobi, Kenya. Saj Foot, thank you very much for taking the time to join us today. I guess where I want to begin is, can you kind of relay to our audience firsthand information as to what kind of impact this grain deal has had since it was implemented back in July?
So from what we've seen on the ground in East Africa is one that since this deal was struck and grain started moving out from Ukraine, we've seen that it has helped some speculation around food and hoarding of food. So a lot more availability of food in the market. It has also led to managing the high rates of inflation in some ways. It did lower inflation in some of the countries, even though the inflation continues to be a problem. And then overall, I think it did have an impact on availability and affordability of food grains in the global market.
And can you expand a little bit more about that? Because some of the first grain shipments were destined for Ethiopia.
So what we had seen is that there was a reduction in food support to a large number of people, especially people who were extremely food insecure. And with the grains coming in into Yemen, into Ethiopia, we were able to see that the coverage and the reach of food support to the populations, which are extremely food insecure, was increased. And there was a much better household level food security in many ways achieved because of the arrival of food grains in the region.
So now that Russia has announced that it's suspending its participation in this Black Sea deal, and even though other countries have said that they are going to step up and take measures to hopefully ensure its continuance, what is the International Rescue Committee's chief concerns about the distribution of food to address world food insecurity, especially there in East Africa where you're located?
If the deal actually collapses, what we will be seeing is that more than 10 million metric tons of grain that is still stuck at the ports will not be able to come out in the global market. Secondly, it will not come to East Africa and countries like Yemen, which are in dire need of food and are highly dependent on food imports from Ukraine and Russia. Third thing, as I was mentioning earlier, that the deal itself had resulted in calming the markets, in managing the price of food grains to some extent, in making sure that the food is available. If the deal fails, we will continue to see, again, speculations in food markets. We will continue to see that the rates, the inflation rates, particularly around food, will go up. And it will hit the most poor and the vulnerable the most. And I'm talking about East Africa, which is already reeling under extreme food insecurity because of the last four failed rains and the ongoing drought. And Somalia almost on the teeters and on the brink of famine as a result of worse drought in 40 years. So it's going to complement and compound the food insecurity and the hunger problem that we are already witnessing in East Africa.
So aside from full re-implementation of the grain deal, what other things can be done?
As the International Rescue Committee, we are making sure that we are able to provide humanitarian assistance to populations in need. We are providing support in the form of cash so that populations in some ways can afford the food that is available, but at a higher price. But what it does do is that it limits our coverage, because if the grain would be released and would be available and the prices would go down, then the coverage through our humanitarian assistance would be much larger than what it would be with the increase in prices of food. What we would also want to see is much stronger social safety nets from the national governments, which will enable the populations to somehow manage this hump and go over the hump of food insecurity that we are witnessing. I also feel that the nations in East Africa and everywhere else, we will have to look at strengthening local food productions. And the International Rescue Committee is working with the farmers, with the pastoralists, to make sure that we can continue to strengthen local production of food and local availability of grains. So I think overall, there is stuff that we can do and we are doing. But I still feel that in the short to medium term, it is very vital that this grain does come to the market, because the interventions that we will be able to do about strengthening local productions would only start to pay some results in medium to long term and not immediately. Whereas the food support, the lowering of food prices, the availability of food, it's required now and today.
Sash Foote is the East Africa Regional Emergency Director with the International Rescue Committee. Sash Foote, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks a lot.
The grain deal was also discussed at the United Nations Security Council, and we'll have that update and more at voanews.com/flashpoint. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. As Ukrainian forces inch closer to the southern city of Kherson, a few of its citizens are opening up about living under an 8-month Russian occupation. And what may happen next as Russia moves newly mobilized recruits into the region. Igor Sikaneka has more.
He says it was all like a bad dream.
There are armored vehicles everywhere, people with machine guns, individuals that stare you in the eye, and then in the back. You never know what to expect and from whom. One time, they just shot up a 9-story building.
A successful businessman and engineer by education, Alexander, paints a bleak picture of life under Russian occupation.
Several people I knew, even those who had nothing to do with the Ukrainian military, just disappeared. There are no lawyers, no attorneys, no courts whatsoever.
Alexander, who is taking English classes at a school in the suburbs of New York, fled Kherson with his 87-year-old mother at the end of summer. The perilous journey was worth it, he says. Staying behind became too dangerous.
Today, all it takes is an anonymous accusation by your neighbor.
In some cases, he says, people are kidnapped and used for slave labor.
In one instance, a local man was taken away. A week later, he came back all covered in black dirt. He was forced to dig graves for the Russians practically at gunpoint.
His testimony of life under the Russian occupation is supported by the accounts of at least half a dozen other former and current residents of Kherson VOA spoke to. One of them is Volodymyr Kostyuk, a former general director of a local TV station and now a volunteer.
Everybody in town talks about all those new unidentified graves that appear at the local geologist cemetery. All I hope for, and we all pray, that there will not be another Bucha here. In other words, I'm okay with dozens of dead, but not hundreds or thousands.
With the Ukraine forces advancing, residents of Kherson say they are puzzled by recent Russian troop movements.
They have been trying to withdraw their regular army regiments, but they also brought in many newly mobilized soldiers here. This is not a contingent that can fight a regular army. They will be annihilated. I don't understand. Why would you do that?
Experts say such a military strategy makes sense, albeit a callous one.
what the Russians appear to be doing is putting large numbers of expendable troops into the city to make sure that the Ukrainians have to fight their way in. At the same time, they're withdrawing their elite forces and proxy politicians to protect them for another day.
Analysts believe the Russians are doing that with the aim of retaking the city later with more well-trained troops.
The most important thing in here is that we don't need anything from them. It's always somehow them who want something from us. They want us to maintain relations. They want us to adopt their point of view. They want me to think and ponder the way they do.
Alexander says regardless of in whose hands his native Kherson remains, it will take generations to repair Ukrainian-Russian relations. Igor Tikhonenko, VOA News, New York.
Ivana Holobstova volunteers in the city of Sumy, Ukraine. There, she takes care of more than 50 dogs that have lost their owners and were left on the streets because of the war. She spends half of her salary feeding the strays. Anna Rice narrates this story to round us out.
Ivana Holobtsova starts her day at a local gym in Sumy, Ukraine. A powerlifting professional, she works here as a personal trainer. When she's not at work, she spends a large chunk of her time and money on the city streets, feeding over 50 stray dogs.
There you go, Shurik. There you go. Jump in. Look what tasty stuff I brought. It all started when I witnessed a car hit a dog in the street. I had to help because I was right there. I took it to a vet hospital and things kind of went from there. Animals just came into my life and now we have this bond that I think is not going anywhere, ever. Who's your big boy? Who's such a good boy? You're mama's boy, that's right. He loves when he's being petted.
Holobtsova feeds the dogs, makes sure they're vaccinated, neutered or spayed, and attends to their injuries.
This dog, he was hit by a car and bitten by a tick.
We treated him properly. He went through several surgeries. He had a bad fracture. I end up doing almost everything by myself. It's impossible to keep taking animals to vets. It's both very pricey and I just don't have enough time. So I sort of turned into a vet myself.
Mushka, you're a star! And Darik is one as well!
And you'll be famous too. You'll be as famous as Madonna. Darik, his owners just threw him out. At the beginning of the war, he just ended up on the streets, like many others like him.
Holobtsova says the war has caused the number of stray animals to double.
I saw some that looked just like skeletons, skeletons running around. They haven't been fed for weeks, it seems, so I had to start feeding them as well. And that's on top of me going to the old metal factory that's been shut off, but it's still home to some 2 dozen stray animals. They were left on the street. Someone needs to feed them. I do what I can afford. Bones, chicken meat, the cheapest I can find.
Holobtsova spends more than half her salary on feeding the animals. Every day after work, she feeds the ones that have become dependent on her care.
I fed them while the city was shelled too. You can't explain to dogs that it's dangerous here. I would arrive here, the shelling, the dogs would follow me every step and bark. It was all so stressful for them. I biked, it was tough, biking on ice and snow without a car. It was tiring, it was slow. My dream is to get a car, the simplest one there is, to drive it around town and feed the dogs.
Despite the challenges, Holobtsova mounts her bike every day and makes her rounds again. For Alena Adamenko in Sumy, Ukraine, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. On behalf of the entire team at Flashpoint Ukraine, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.